Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, brought to you by the Desai Group. The Desai Group, getting the real work of innovation done. Visit them on the web at desai.com, D-E-S-A-I.com. The High Velocity Radio Show is where we celebrate innovative professionals producing better results in less time. Produced and directed by Lee Cantor and brought to you live from the Radio X studio in Atlanta, Georgia. Now here's your host, Stone Payton.
Welcome to the show, everybody. This is your host, Stone Payton, and I'm joined by my co-host and producer, Lee Cantor. What's shaking, Lee?
Just the usual fun and games here in Atlanta. What about you?
Hey, well, first, I want to hear about the kid report. I understand that your son has been out to the West Coast and is just becoming a real rock star.
Yes, he had his big day in the sun. He worked the Kids' Choice Awards. He was on the orange carpet, not the red carpet, for Nickelodeon.
Right.
And he interviewed the celebrities like Paula Abdul, the Jonas Brothers, Naked Brothers Band, the girl from Achille and the Bee, just 20-plus, you know, superstars in the teen media.
Well, there you have it. If you're in Atlanta and you're in the business world and you want to be a rock star, you need to get to know Lee Cantor and Radio X. That's all it takes.
We make magic happen in here, Stone. You know that.
Of course, the only reason I teed the conversation up about kids was because I wanted to brag on my own.
Oh, there you go.
Well, I have a 16-year-old with her own wheels and her own money. And do you know, Saturday night, she elected to stay home and play board games with the family.
See, I would be suspicious of that. So that's a setup for something in the future.
Of course, she cleaned our clock. She whipped all of us. But more to the point I was making a moment ago, the reason that we had family over, my nephew is the closest thing that I have to a video editor, and he was over putting together a new speaker reel. And the reason that I'm having to put together a new speaker reel is because people are hearing us on the High Velocity Radio Show, and I'm getting invited to go around town and speak.
Well, you got to love that.
See? It's all coming full circle.
There you go. That's awesome.
Well, we've got a marvelous show for you this morning. We have a couple of guests that I've really been excited about bringing to you for some time. In a little while, we're going to hear from a gentleman with Stratalide. His name is Roger Rake, and has what I consider to be a very interesting perspective. Particularly on forming partnerships. And so I'm really excited about giving you an opportunity to hear that interview. But first up on the High Velocity Radio Show, we have the Vice President of Innovation from the Desai Group. Now, the Desai Group is our flagship sponsor. And in the interest of full disclosure, I need to let you know this if you don't already. Yours truly, Stone Payton, is on the Desai payroll as well. We'll see how long that lasts.
Right, but I'm not, so all bets are off with me.
There you go. We'll turn Lee loose on him. But without further ado, please join me in welcoming Vice President of Innovation for the Desai Group out of West Hartford, Connecticut, Mr. Dan Brown. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
We're delighted to have you on the show. I tell you what, before we dive too deep and turn Lee loose on you, how about just giving our listeners a little background on the Desai Group in general and the innovation execution practice?
Well, sure, Stone. That's a great idea. We've been in business for about 25 years and really working with corporate America here, mostly in the New England region, but most recently, the last 2 or 3 years, we've branched out and working internationally now. So, you know, who would have dreamed, and I'm not sure that it's a great dream, I'm still wondering about it, but, you know, when you're in the innovation business and all of a sudden the entire country is looking for innovation, right? So there's a little bit of a benefit to what's going on in the business world nowadays that's impacting our business from an innovation execution standpoint. I think everyone's realized that most businesses out there today have to change in some way. So our innovation execution practice is really aligned around that. It's helping organizations identify and build skills and behaviors to support the changing business world and what they should do, and you know how to select the best opportunities, how to engage your entire workforce, and really how to then execute on something. Right? We all have tons of ideas, and I guess what really drew me into innovation execution was when I was running my own company, and people used to just say, you know, there's tons of ideas around here. Nobody ever does anything with them, right?
Right.
We've all heard that at some point.
Now, are there some industries that are embracing innovation more than others? Like I know we've talked to a lot of people in healthcare.
Yep. absolutely, healthcare is looking for change. We do a lot of work in the pharmaceutical industry as well, because most people have seen that there's a lot of challenges in front of the pharmaceutical industry, and they're tied right in with healthcare.
Can you speak a little bit about what DSI does with those clients in order to help them really wring out the most of innovation?
Oh, sure. What we're doing right now, most of the time with our clients, is many of them have identified the need to change the culture inside their organization, right? Change some of the behaviors that the people have, where it used to be that the two or three people at the top of an organization had the ideas and they funneled those down and had very specific working plans. But what most of the organizations that are working with us now have realized is that the people that are at the lower levels of our organization are the people that have the most direct contact with our consumers and basically with our industry in general. So what we're really doing is trying to help them in two ways. One is, how can I take that individual that's on the front line and help them feel empowered to use their brain more? One of my favorite quotes when I was back in the training industry was from a guy by the name of Jack Welch. Now, you guys have heard of Jack Welch before, I'd imagine, right?
Sure.
But what he said was, he's out giving a town hall meeting, and he was talking to a group of about 100 people, and this woman in the front row raised her hand, and she said, Jack, this is all interesting what you're talking about, but here's the challenge that I have. I've worked for you for 25 years, and for 25 years you've had my hands and you've had my feet, and I've done the work that's been asked of me. And you paid me for that, and I appreciate it. The one thing that you didn't realize, or that I think the organization doesn't realize, is that you could have had my brain at no charge. You just never asked for it, right? So part of what we're doing is helping organizations ask for it, and then putting a structure in place, helping them build a structure internally, whether it's innovation teams and innovation champions and councils, and then also some idea management processes, so that when that person on the front line does have an idea, there's actually something that they can do with it. How do I raise it up? How do I get support for it? Where are those mechanisms inside my organization to really encourage and empower the people that are on the front line dealing with the customers and the suppliers and everyone that's most important to the organization?
Now, in some companies, the the C-suite kind of thinks they have a monopoly on ideas and that, all the brilliance exists there. How do you really get them to embrace the fact that there's people all over the company that has ideas?
Well, it's an interesting process, right? And, I've talked with Stone a lot about this, and I've talked with our clients a lot about it. You don't actually change the perspective for those people, right? And I don't know, I haven't found that five-minute conversation that I went into the CEO or the CIO with the world's largest ego and convinced them all of a sudden that, oh, that's right, I don't have all the ideas, right? Most of that happens environmentally. And what I mean by that is that business starts to struggle. There's challenges that they see coming in the marketplace that make them go, maybe I don't have every answer to this. Maybe I don't understand my customer quite as well. Otherwise, the competition wouldn't have gotten to the level that it's gotten to. So typically, there's something that happens environmentally in most people's organization that makes them think, okay, we've really got to get some more people aligned with this. But you're not going to change their behavior completely just by having something like that independently happen. What happens with us is we help them to align the organization a little bit better, to allow them to really take the data and interpret it and identify what the important parts of their organization are and what the important insights in the organization are that they need to react to. So what's going on that they see as challenges, and allow them to select two or three key challenges that they think are most important to get the organization working around. So we call that creating space, and you create a little bit of space for people to go out and generate ideas. And it works as you get down further into the organization as well, because if you asked 40 people what the most important priority was and what they should do about it, you'd get at least 30 different answers. Most organizations these days have the time and resources to act on two or three. So if you do the math on that, I've got two or three people that are happy that their ideas are taken and used, and I've got 27 people that are kind of disenfranchised because they were asked for their ideas, but nothing happened with them. So we allow the leaders in the organization to help kind of identify what the largest priorities are, and then we help them engage the rest of the organization in trying to solve those challenges.
Dan, it seems to me that the immediate response to a dearth in innovation is so often to try to acquire resources, tools, training, and education. And so there's just, at least from my perspective, it seems like there's a lot of folks doing some genuinely good work with processes like mind mapping and different ways to help organizations and those teams harvest ideas. And so I'm seeing a lot of tools and products. I mean, it's almost like reading a golf magazine. You know, you see the latest gadgets for the golfer. And I'm just, I guess I'm getting to come to the point where I feel like, you know, all of that's great, and I think we need to continue to innovate in that arena as well. But, you know, I wonder if where the whole darn opera doesn't fall apart is somewhere between idea and marketplace. And I think that's one of the things that attracted me so much to working with the Decide Group. Can you talk a little bit more about bridging that gap and giving the organization and the people within it somewhere to apply the fruits of their labor?
Yeah, sure, Stone. That's, you know, that's one of the things that we find is one of the guys that I work with, a partner here, said to me at one point, you know, we're not going to fix things by doing creativity training, right? So it's not something that there's a lot of organizations that think they need innovation, and so they try and solve the skills and do a workshop on creativity and how do we be more creative. But really it is about aligning the organization around what some of the insights are that are going to affect the organization most importantly. And those are the ideas that you're actually going to be able to get the funding for and get the managerial support to actually take it to fruition. Now, we're doing a lot of work, and what we're finding, honestly, is that sometimes trying to force innovation into a direct business line is not always the best way to do it when you're trying to get something to market. Because mm-hmm. guess what? Those executives are paid on exactly what happens day-to-day in that organization, right? And so any amount of change that they integrate into their business line probably means a little less return for them in the immediate near future. And many of the organizations are aligned that way. So we're doing a lot of work with innovation management offices. I think you like to call them actually emerging business offices on occasion.
Yeah, I stole that from my wife's field of work.
That's right.
Yeah, she's at IBM, and they're setting up these EBOs in several organizations. So when I find a good phrase like that, I commandeer it for myself.
Well, I think it's, you know, it's the right way to look at things. There's no reason for us to create our own language, right?
Right.
One of the things that you'll find a lot of innovation companies doing is they have different terms for everything that's going on, right? Orthodoxies and, you know, they're terms that people don't know. I mean, we're having trouble getting people to understand what is really meant by innovation, right? So I don't think we're helping anything by creating a whole other language to go around it. Anything that we can do to leverage what already exists in the organization and try to make that more palatable for the people, easier for them to understand, I think is the right thing to do. But when you're actually trying to get something into the industry and get something into market, it helps sometimes to have some people that are purely just focused on that aspect of it. You know, we're doing assessments as we go through these organizations, and every time the number one challenge that people have is we don't have the capacity for innovation, meaning time and resources.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're trying to get something to market, you're trying to go quickly. Giving it to someone who already has 110% of stuff on their plate isn't necessarily the best way to go. So that's where we've gone with the model of trying to encourage some funding that comes from outside, put some people in, prove the product, prototype it, even if, whether it's a product or a service or just a business model, prove that it works, and then integrate it into your business line instead of trying to make everything go there. You want to pull the information and the ideas out, and you want to prototype them, you want to work with them, and then when you've proven that that's going to work and it's going to have a successful impact on the business and you can prove that to the leaders and show them the return, they're much more likely to integrate it into what they have to do day to day.
Now, Dan, can you share maybe an example of you were working with a client and you were able to implement one of these things and they had a dramatic change?
A lot of the stuff that we've done has been proprietary, actually, but some of the stuff, if you want to think about an organization around business model, right, and customer engagement, we've worked in several instances where, you know, we've pulled out small groups, worked on customer engagement models for how they're really going to go to market next. And then as you start to build that, you start to see the adjustments happening in other parts of the organization. So in small pieces, the successful parts of the new business model start to get integrated in with the existing business models that are there. Our organization doesn't focus a lot on product. We focus mostly on process and business model and that type of alignment. So a lot of that is difficult for me to share in an open public environment. But really the couple of examples that you can have are people that have had fantastic ideas around how to engage different customer segments and how to go to market with different strategies around those that have given them time to separate themselves from different competitors.
Dan, you said something a moment ago that raised two questions for me, and one is something that I continue to wrestle with a little bit and try to convey to the people that I'm trying to reach here in the Southeast market, but that's just a very simple, straightforward, concise distinction between innovation and creativity. So in just a moment, if you would, I'd love for you to give our listeners your take on that, the difference in innovation and creativity. And then I guess I've got more of a consulting process question for you that comes to mind for me. I know there's a lot of energy right now, at least for our firm, in helping some of these large organizations that we're working with set up these EBOs or innovation management offices. But I guess one concern for me is, if you do that and do that well, don't you run the risk of the perception among the rank and file being, okay, innovation is their job, and so by default, it's almost not my job anymore?
That's fantastic. Yeah, that's great insight, Stone. And so let's start with that question, and I'll come back to you one about creativity and innovation.
That's great. Okay.
What we've really structured with these emerging business offices is that when the people are part of an idea, we allow them to participate still in what's happening. Right. So as they go and push an idea into an emerging business office, the champion for that idea or the person that's part of that team that's responsible for it stays part of the process and is integrated there. So that person's, you know, joy and excitement of something happening like that still stays out in the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And we encourage them to talk about it. You know, it really does a couple things. One is it helps us continue with keeping the field engaged, because we're very specific about processes that you need to use to pull ideas out of the rank and file, right, and try to get those ideas promoted higher. But what it also does is it stops the idea from being completely changed from what it was originally.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of organizations we found used to take an idea from the field and put it into a separate environment and just lose communication with the field, right, and go about creating the idea any way that they wanted to, or what they thought was best. They weren't doing anything, you know, malicious, but when you lose the person that had the passion for the idea, sometimes you lose really the value of the idea. Going back to innovation and creativity, you know, creativity is just coming up with new and novel ideas, right? Creative ways to approach a problem. The innovation part is actually creating value out of that idea. Right? So how do I implement something that may be a creative idea and get some value out of it? And one of the things that we talk about is, because of the difference there, the amount of change does not necessarily have to mean that the amount of impact is large or small. And to give you an example, you can have a very small change and have a dramatic impact. One of our customers actually figured out after spending lots of time and money that this was in the healthcare field, so hopefully it's helpful for you guys, is, you know, that the one thing that they could do to best engage their customer base was to start asking the person's name instead of asking their policy number first.
Imagine that.
You would be amazed at the impact that had on their customer returns, right, on their customer satisfaction surveys, which all these organizations do. But think of the amount of change that demanded. Not much. But the impact that it had was tremendous. So the creativity was there. But the innovation part of it was actually putting that idea in place, changing the systems so that that idea worked, and then actually seeing the rewards from it at the other side.
Now, Dan, when you're working with a company like that, is that part of what Decai does, is kind of get this information and then give them process and give them examples of how to implement it?
That's right. How do you select the best idea? And, you know, we're an innovation company, right? We're not necessarily a healthcare company, so we're not going to tell you that we understand the best process to put something in place in a new way in the healthcare system. What we're going to do is help you harvest the ideas from your people, try to find a way to actually make those ideas come to life, and then change and build your culture a little bit. We found that you want to continually stay engaged with the business unit, and this goes back to your original question, Stone, I think, which is once that idea has been prototyped and looks like it's going to work, we put it right back into the business unit if it's possible so that the people that had the idea originally can execute on it. That keeps them engaged. That sees the idea come all the way back around to fruition and what they do. Now, obviously, there are some ideas that go to an emerging business office, but it turns out that that would be better off as a different business line, or that would be more effective in a different part of an organization, or frankly, that idea is just not going to work. And communication around all those decisions and getting that information back to the people that had the original idea and worked on the idea is an important part to continuing to make sure that people stay engaged.
Now, Dan, I know that part of how you get the word out about what you guys do is you put events on. And I hear there's a rumor that there's an event happening here in Atlanta in April. Can you speak a little bit about that?
I sure can. So April 23rd, we're holding an event at Glen Lake Parkway, actually. And it's going to be it's a half-day event around what is strategy-driven innovation, how do you do it? What are some of the most important things that you need to do on a regular basis? And the part that I think we're really excited about is in the afternoon having some one-on-one time with the people that actually come and talking about real business issues that they're facing, talking about different approaches to it. And, you know, one of the things that I think is most important for innovation is collaboration, and not necessarily just collaborating amongst you and I, right? It's collaborating with people that are outside your business unit, that are outside of your industry even, to hear what ideas they have. You know, I guess there's a famous quote, and maybe I shouldn't use it because I can't remember who said it, but you guys can just edit it out for me if it's not appropriate.
It was probably Stone. He'll take credit for it even if it doesn't matter.
I think I'm safe. You know, 80% of my quotes, I think, come from Stone. But, you know, it said that people enter the business world as question marks, right? And once they've been there for 3 or 4 years, they become periods. Right? I think sometimes innovation comes best from people that don't understand your business down to the process level. So the people that are newest to your organization, people that are your customers, people that are your suppliers, and then sometimes people that just have no idea what you're doing, if you can explain to them what you do as an organization and try to get their input on it, sometimes that's where a lot of really creative ideas come from. It's up to you whether you can make them an innovation.
Very well put. And for our listeners who are interested in that session, you can go to www.innosession.com. That's INNOSESSION.com and learn all about it, or give us a call at the Decide Group, or here in the Atlanta region, you can reach us at 770-518-1412. Dan, we could have you on all day, man. I love hearing you talk through innovation and how to apply it and really help organizations get their arms around these processes. We're running out of time for your segment, but before we let you go, we have a little tradition here on the High Velocity Radio Show where we ask each guest to share a mistake that they've made somewhere in their career, and really, more importantly, what they've learned from it. Could we get you to do that for us?
Sure. You know, the only hard part is selecting which one, right?
Right.
I mean, I think successful people actually learn from their mistakes every day, and that's the biggest thing. But, you know, I think from my standpoint, the one mistake that I made that I'm finally recognizing now is when I was a leader, and I told you guys earlier, I used to run my own company, I really did think I had the ideas. I really thought that I needed people to just execute what I thought. And it wasn't until I really saw that harnessing the power of everyone that worked for me that had different relationships, that had different perspectives. We spend a lot of time here doing something we call lensing, right, which is looking at it from different people's perspectives. But the single biggest lesson I learned was, you know, there's an awful lot of people out there that have brains, that went through just as much schooling as you did, that have relationships with other people just like you do. And the best thing that you can do is at least ask for different perspectives when you're making decisions, when you're thinking about your business, when you're looking at things. Things are just so much better when you have more people in the game. And when they're engaged from their level, it's just amazing what an organization can do and how it can change the culture and your feeling when you go to work. So I think the biggest mistake that I ever made really was thinking that I knew everything. You know, I think anyone that ends up running a business or something. It, to a degree, you have to have that for a little while, right? Otherwise, you don't have the courage to go and do it. But, man, the quicker you can get to the point where you can incorporate everyone else's thinking, you're so much better off.
Well, that is an important lesson, and you're absolutely right. I know I've I'm almost terminally unemployable, but I have had a few leaders in my time, and one of whom I just absolutely thought the world of and saw him get so much out of his people. His favorite phrase in the world was, "I don't know, what do you think?"
Right.
And it was just one of the most powerful things. He genuinely meant it, and he really did capitalize on the talent and the discretionary effort of the rest of us in the firm. Well, Dan, thank you so much for joining us. If I don't see you before, maybe I'll see you on April the 23rd, and I'll call you soon, and I'll get that expense report in.
Sounds great. Hey, thanks, guys, for all your work, and I really enjoyed talking with you. If at any time I can be of help, just give me a call.
Hey, we'll do it, man. Maybe we'll have you back on the show.
Now, what's the best way somebody to get a hold of you?
Or just pick up the phone and call me. I'd love to just talk. Phone number here is 860-233-0011, and I'm at extension 860.
Thank you, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye. Well, next up on the High Velocity Radio Show, I am delighted to introduce a gentleman to you from a firm called Stratalie. His name is Roger Rake. Welcome to the show, Roger.
Thanks, Stone. Good to be here.
So what kind of work are you out there doing, and how are you helping folks?
My company helps business owners and managers to be far more productive, far more profitable, have a better personal life by doing a better job of strategic planning, by employing more powerful alliances and partnerships, and by getting more out of their employee base.
Well, you almost had me at hello. I was just about to say sign me up until you said strategic planning. Do you find that potential customers that their eyes glaze over when you say that?
That sounds like a lot of work.
It is a lot of work, and the greatest difficulty for many companies is putting aside their previously generated strategic plan and actually opening things up to new ideas, new opinions. In fact, one of the greatest difficulties we have is getting people to be aware that they have inbred thinking. They've been operating for some time on a basic set of assumptions, and we've got to change that. We've got to get them to come into the 21st century.
Shouldn't be a problem at Radio X having to throw aside your strategic plan.
Yeah, that's not a problem. So how do you get people to do that? First of all, do they even know that they're not? Like, do they even know that they should be doing this?
Well, typically they don't. They believe that things have been successful up to this point, and they're not really willing to admit that they could be better. So a big part of what we do is have a meeting at the start of our effort where we identify areas that they haven't ever considered. And then we try to impress on them the fact that they may have a very good employee base. They may have a lot of experience in the marketplace they're dealing with. But unless they bring in some outside experts, some outside thinking into what they've been doing, they're just not going to recognize that they don't know what they don't know. And that's a big part of the process.
Is there any examples, like maybe a car company or two, that maybe didn't plan as well as they might have should have?
Well, there are lots of examples that we wind up dealing with. But I've got one that I would point at, which is a machine manufacturer that's a 30-year-old company. The first 20 years were really successful for them, and they made a lot of money. But the last 10, they've been very unsuccessful, and the business has really run in the ditch. So it's a process of getting them to understand that they really have to change. The old rules just don't work anymore.
Now, is it sometimes that they just have to go out of business?
Well, we hope that doesn't happen. The automotive companies are the people wrestling with that. But honestly, many smaller businesses as well are having the same kind of problem. They really just need, in some cases, a slap upside the head to wake up and understand that the world isn't the same as it was before.
And then they have to reinvent themselves a little and just tweak what they're doing a lot of times?
That's exactly right. We don't use the term reinvent because it's a little bit of a cliche, but what we try to do is get them to understand the limitations of their existing thinking and the limitations of the procedures that they've had in place up to this point. We try to get them to understand that there are better ways of doing things, and the alliances and partnerships piece of it is a big part of how we help companies to understand.
Can you speak a little bit about that and give us some examples of how companies can reach out to partners, sometimes even their competitors, right, And create alliances that can grow their business?
That's a great point. I worked for a very large company a few years back that had a very concentrated effort on partnering with all of their major customers, with all of their major vendors, and with all of their competitors. The essence of it is it gives you opportunities to, if you're talking about competitors, it gives you opportunities to share resources. You may be able to share expensive equipment. You don't all have to own the same kinds of equipment. You can share it. You can share facilities. And in today's world, there's a lot of outsourcing that's beneficial to you. You can outsource to competitors just as you can to other contract manufacturing companies. So there are lots of ways of using those partnerships with competitors. The other piece that people miss is the incredible amount of market data you get from these partnerships. If you're dealing with your major customers, they will tell you what they think, where they think the world is going. They'll identify trends that you haven't been aware of or been expecting. The same is true of competitors, and the same is true of your vendors. If you go to your vendors and ask them for market data, ask them for trend analysis, they'll open up opportunities that you just hadn't considered before.
So walk us through, if you would, let's say it's a professional services firm, I don't know, like a $5 to $10 million firm.
Are you talking about you?
This is a purely hypothetical case.
Is this your way of getting free advice? That's what it sounds like.
That's what I'm thinking. You know, I mean, what?
We got him here. Yeah,
exactly.
Here.
Absolutely. So you've got a professional services firm. You have a a person heading up the organization that's very well known, very highly credentialed. You got this, just racehorse guy in one of your regions getting the word out.
Superstar.
Superstar, rock star. You know, everybody wants to be on his show. But all kidding aside, can you just kind of walk us through some of the major steps? What would you do with a firm like that to help them get their arms around this thing?
Well, the first place we start is ask them for a copy of their existing strategic plan.
Uh-oh.
So when they don't have one, what's the second step?
The second step is to get them to set aside some time to really go into identifying what is their business. And you'd be surprised how difficult that is for many, many companies. They truly don't understand what their business is. Once they can identify that, we identify who they're targeting, who are the principal customers they're going after, and then how are they going after them. And those four different pieces really identify a lot of problems in the typical company.
Well, I bet those are some really interesting conversations, and I wonder if you don't get some very different answers from the same questions from the different players in those organizations. I bet you do.
Absolutely. In fact, that's, one of the things that we try to do is get corporate management to push their strategies, push their objectives down to the lowest levels of the organization. Keep presenting those strategies and their strategic direction to everyone in the organization. If they do that, it makes the individual within the organization a better contributor to the plan. Hopefully he's got goals and objectives that are parallel to those corporate objectives that he can be measured on, and he can contribute to the overall strategy.
And if not, you can free up his future, right?
It's true. High performance management of people is really one of the biggest areas to help companies, and we do an awful lot of concentration on that kind of effort as well.
Well, I wanted to ask you about this because I wrote it down and someone published it, so now I have to say, this is what Stone thinks. But I've made the comment in a couple of speeches lately and in a recent article that the culture really does not respond. They don't act on strategic intent. And the point I was trying to make is what the culture is genuinely responding to is their best understanding of the rules for survival and prosperity. But by the same token, I wasn't suggesting that strategy and strategic intent weren't important, but I'd like to hear your take on all that.
I think the biggest issue is typically corporate management doesn't communicate well with the standard rank and file workers. They just don't spend the time discussing where they're trying to take the company and what they're trying to accomplish. There are areas where techniques are developed to make people more efficient, but a big part of it, I think, is cross-reporting of functional and management objectives for each individual group. one of the things that I've employed with, I've been involved in four different turnarounds where I've managed those turnarounds, is I've gotten the employee groups in marketing and in engineering and in sales and operations to cross-report quarterly on their goals and objectives. That whole process creates conflict, it creates competition, but it also highlights a group that isn't functioning as the corporate strategic direction directs.
So you can get outed in a hurry with this cross-reporting.
You get exposed. Then the first quarterly meetings are always pretty brutal, but the second quarterly meetings are much, much better.
Now, I know a lot of what you try to do is to empower, you know, people across in all aspects of the corporation. Do you find that the people, you know, lower down the food chain are a little distrustful and they're hesitant to kind of embrace this because either they think that they'll be taking advantage of or they're doing something that they're not paid to do? How do you really get them to kind of buy in?
Well, a huge part of that is training the managers to communicate their requests in a way that are non-threatening. I'm not a believer in threatening employees, and I think the biggest reason for suspicion is when you don't have a process that allows you to review and incentivize and reward people for their performance if it's just a good old boys network.
Right.
It's got to be tied to specific objectives, and those objectives have to be tied to the corporate objectives. If you do that, you generate a culture where the employee understands that if he does his job and meets his objectives and is a good employee, he's going to be rewarded for it.
Now, but in these kind of situations, companies don't exist in a vacuum. You know, they hire you to come in and implement this, but this isn't the employee's first rodeo. You know, there might have been a half a dozen other consultants with great ideas, and they've seen, you know, whole departments disappear when, you know, the new great idea has, you know, come in. So how do you have to integrate this, I would think, in a way that is eased in, where they kind of don't know what's happening and then it's happened. Like, how do you approach that?
That's exactly right. The effort starts at the very top. You've got to get the corporate CEO, chairman of the board itself, committed to doing things in a different way than they've done in the past. You've got to highlight the benefits that they're going to see, and then you have to do the training that gets them to understand the language to use to communicate the requests and push it down the organization. One of the tricks that I tend to use is once a strategic plan is completed, I want the corporate management people to be presenting that plan to everyone within the organization and to do that repetitively. If you can push that plan down to the lowest levels of the organization, people are going to have a better understanding of the overall direction. You can't brute force this, though. It actually opens up, your question opens up the topic of leadership. Leadership, I think, is in many ways an overused topic. I think you lead by example. You lead by setting up processes that show that people and the business can be successful. And if you set up those processes, you're leading the company. You're not concerned about what tie you're wearing. You're just leading by example and by process.
I think that's exactly right. I think that the people down the food chain are going to respect it and kind of buy in more if they see the higher level people, you know, walking the walk instead of just telling me what to do.
That's exactly right. The other piece that happens, and it happens over a little bit of time, I talked about these quarterly meetings, quarterly functional group reporting meetings, is the people that were maybe out of favor for a time are going to see that some of the golden boys are going to be criticized because they're not performing. And once that happens, they get a recognition that if you do your job and you do it better than anyone else, people really are going to understand it.
Right.
It doesn't matter whether you are a smoker and your boss hates smoke. That's unimportant. The issue
right.
is performance.
And right. Move the ball for the company.
Exactly.
Doesn't matter how. Just make it happen.
Exactly.
So what's the most fun part of your work and what's the most frustrating?
The most fun part is getting companies to actually change. That is so rewarding because change really helps the direction of the company. So many companies get stagnant. And the most difficult, the most hard for me to accept are those businesses that simply will not change. They've been doing the same thing for years and years, and they just don't see the importance of making change. You know, in this area, we see an awful lot of strip malls show up, and there are an awful lot of them where there are franchises going out of business. It breaks mm-hmm. my heart. I get dragged into many of those franchises to try and save them. But it's too late. You know, by the time I get dragged in, commonly they've spent all of their capital. Right. They don't have a marketing plan. They never have a plan to start with. They bought themselves a business by buying a franchise.
Sure.
And it breaks my heart because there's not a lot of miracles I can do for people that have run out of money and haven't had a positive bottom line for years.
Now, in this economy, it's challenging for a lot of businesses. Is this something that you see as, are you optimistic or do you look at this as this is a huge opportunity for a lot of firms now? Or is this something where you got to just kind of hold the line and wait it out?
I present a lot of seminars and one of the first things I talk about is that the economic times we're in today are the perfect opportunity for real change, for grabbing more share of market, for changing who you are and what you are. It has presented opportunities for acquisitions and mergers. It presents you with talent that's on the street that you weren't able to get access to before. There's monstrous opportunities if you'll only get out of the hunkered down mode and work on improving your business and growing it.
Right.
I mean, that's a great point. There really is some very strong talent out on the street. I know in some of the larger organizations, you know, IBM just laid off a bunch of other people the other day, and they're not laying off dead wood. You know, sometimes you hear about layoffs, and I mean, to be perfectly
they don't
candid,
use a scalpel when they're doing this. They're,
I mean, there's some really
this
strong
is a
talent.
Chainsaw mentality, I think, in a lot of companies. They're hacking away.
Well, that's exactly right. And there's a business model that has developed that is using a lot of these senior experienced people mm-hmm. in a way to grow your business without having you to bear the risk of hiring them to start as a full-time employee. The 1099 process of using contractors to fulfill specific business contracts is incredibly powerful. And for small businesses in particular, it's a tremendous opportunity for them.
Right. You can get all this brain power just kind of on an hourly basis.
Exactly.
As you
right.
need it.
Yeah,
you know?
Keep that cost variable. Now, you're also doing some fun projects, I understand. In fact, I know because you were kind enough to invite me to, I don't know what you would call that meeting, an investment meeting or whatever, but I was fascinated with this particular organization, but also just the idea that all over town, and I guess all over the country, there are people like you that are helping young entrepreneurs like this get connected with the funding they need to take their organizations to the next level. Can you tell us a little bit more about your work in that arena?
Sure. I have a number of startup organizations that have enlisted my company's services to help them get off the ground. And fundamentally, it starts with helping them to review their business plan and their strategic plan, mm-hmm. make sure that is in a form that investors can understand and can buy into. The process is really fundamental business planning and then management team development. They've got to have a good management team in order to secure funds. So I'm wrapped into several of them. One, the one that you and I were involved with, is a document security firm, and we're trying to raise $2.5 million for them. That's going to happen, I think, within the next month.
Lee, can you kick in anything on that?
What do you need? I got my wallet here. Do you take credit cards?
Yes, we'll take credit cards, as long as they're American Express.
Yeah, no problem.
There's a whole process to doing it. It's a fun process to go through. It's an educational process, typically for the startup company.
Do you prefer working with startups than more established firms?
The problem with startups for an executive consultant like myself is typically they don't have any money to start.
Yes.
So it requires an awful lot of time to get off the ground and get them rolling.
Right.
So I prefer paying customers if I can get
ahead
them.
Of there's this. paying ahead of potential, right?
Paying is good.
Better.
Paying is definitely good. So I limit the number of startups that I
sure.
get.
Sure. You got to really buy in, I would imagine.
Well, it isn't just buying in. It's just there's an awful lot of time that is pro bono time that is necessary, and our organization wants to do the best job it can for anybody we encounter. So we limit it. I'm really dealing with only about three right now.
Now, when you're working with them, do you help them in all areas? Like you help them find the talent? You really get enmeshed in their organization?
Very heavily involved. And in fact, I have the benefit of having a huge network worldwide. I've got 2,000 executives doing work like myself around the world. We have about 1,200 in North America and 170 in the southeast corner of North America. And that network provides me with tremendous power in terms of finding potential customers, finding potential investors, vendors, support, facilities, everything that they need.
Now, just kind of a little off topic, but what's your take on the economy? Are we heading out? Good, bad? What do you see? You mentioned early in the morning you said the market was going to go down 500 points. So I want to see your...
careful. If Roger says it, happens.
True.
It's like
so
the president.
I'm already selling. I've already... while we were talking, I sold everything. So what do you see ahead of us?
Well, I think we're in for a bit of a long haul. I think it's 2009 is going to be a difficult year. End to end, I think. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be slower to come back from this recession because fundamentally the government is trying to do too much, in my opinion.
So you think they should get out of the way a little bit?
They should get out of the way and they should slow down the printing of money. I think that's a problem.
Yeah,
I saw a recent interview of a British congressman chewing out his prime minister by saying you can't borrow your way out of debt, and
right.
And that's pretty appropriate for the area that we're in. I think we're going to come out stronger and better. You can't help but be an optimist when you've been around for as long as I have. But the opportunity is there for major change in the marketplace because we're going to see mergers and acquisitions out of necessity.
Right, consolidation, there has to be.
It'll be enormous.
Right, the strong will buy the weak that's, the weak but clever,
Very well said, very well said. That's exactly right. So,
but markets like this really do have a tendency to weed out the marginal performers and create space for those of us that say we're not going to participate in this recession, depression,
exactly.
Whatever you're going to label it.
Yeah, but Roger's exactly right that there's so much brain power that it frees up. They don't just get rid of, like, the dummies. There's a bunch of smart people that are floating around that now have the time to plan and to create partnerships to create all new things that we're not even aware of yet.
And at the end of the Carter administration, the start of the Ronald Reagan administration, we had a banking crisis then, too.
Sure.
There were 3,000 banks that failed during that time. Now, we didn't take them over.
Right.
We didn't protect them all.
Right.
We didn't print money hand over fist. So I think we've got to be careful with what we do going forward. But the essence of it is the free market does work. There is need for regulation.
Right.
Over-regulation is as bad a problem.
It seems like we don't want to have any pain. We want to do this without anybody getting hurt, and that's where I think the problem lies.
We've developed this complex that the government should protect all of us, and that's a scary concept.
Right.
It's totally alien to the way that most business people think. But
sure.
But it's unfortunate. It's the way we've become.
Right.
Lee wanted to produce a political show for some time now. I think you've done it.
I told you. Sorry.
Oh, well.
Sorry, Steph.
The High Velocity Radio Show is now officially your political radio show.
Nothing to say.
Hey, I absolutely enjoyed having you on the show today, and I hope we'll get you back. You heard us a little while ago. We had Dan Brown with the Decide Group on. You heard us put him on the hot seat and ask him to share a mistake that he had made somewhere in his career. Can we get you to do that for us?
Oh, I'd be happy to.
Not a mistake that Dan made. One of your own, if you would.
Yeah, or Dan, whatever.
Or Dan. Yeah, sure. Do what you want. Sure. I mean, it's your show.
Fairly early in my career, I was marketing manager for a new product line where the company I was working for was a small instrumentation company. When I joined the company, this product was going to sell for about $6,000. By the time we got it completed, which took over a year longer than it should have, our manufacturing costs were $14,000. Now, at that point, I was directed and I accepted the assignment of trying to sell this product for, instead of $6,000, in the $25,000 to $26,000 area, which, of course, it didn't sell. And, of course, I was fired because I wasn't capable of selling this. Well, the problem basically was I didn't adhere to the original plan. The original plan was done based on market research that identified the market opportunity was $6,000 to $8,000 as a selling price. If you turn your back on it, you're just setting yourself up to fail, and I set myself up to fail. I learned a lot about the importance of strategic planning at that point.
The hard way.
That's the hard way.
Yes, that's what puts you in the strategic planning business. Well, if people want to hear more about your other screw-ups or maybe hire you to help them with partnering and strategic planning, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
We prefer people to call us. Our number is 770-689-6261. We think that's the most direct way to get input from our potential customers and to get engaged with them. So we prefer to direct them to that number.
There you go. Get on the horn with Roger.
That old school. Nice.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. It's been an absolute delight, Roger.
Thank you so much for allowing me to be here. Thanks.
Until next week, this is Stone Payton, Lee Cantor, Roger Rake, Dan Brown, and the entire Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.